Can I just tell you guys before we get started, I forgot how dark the country gets at night.
Yeah, no lights anywhere.
You ever see the movie The Strangers? I was waiting for some guy in a white hood to show up on my back porch.
Please remember the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. That's right. Welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I am your host, Joaquin Watai, and you are listening to the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR. Today, I brought in a couple of folks who I work with very closely on a daily basis. They are both professional trainers. One, Kathy, is involved in a German Shepherd rescue and training, and Patrick has just begun his own service dog training business. And wanted to bring you two in to kind of talk with the audience about realistic expectations when you start on your PTSD service dog journey. So first of all, thank you both for joining me.
And Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you betcha. If you wouldn't mind, just let the audience know a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
All right. Well, I'm a Marine Corps veteran. Served in Iraq and Afghanistan. From Iraq was 08 to 09, Afghanistan was 09 to 10, and then went on to embassy duty. And on embassy duty, being away from the constant workup and combat and all that, that's when my PTSD stuff, the symptoms really started showing, which led to further issues and discharge later on due to medical reasons. And then when I got Twix, I actually had no intention of him becoming a service dog. I got him after my first year in college, and I saw just the effect that just his presence alone had on me. I mean, the first night I had him home is the first night I slept for more than 3 hours continuously. So a couple months later, I started looking into service dog training, service dog. I already had the diagnosis of PTSD. And that's when I really started training him to be my service dog. And now, let's see, he just turned 4, so 3 years later, I've started my own business, which isn't specific to service dogs. I mean, I can still do like public access training with dogs and training behaviors and addressing some behaviors. Task training is kind of, it's not my strong suit yet. It's definitely stuff I can work on and get better at so that I can offer it later on. But at this point in time, it's more just training behaviors we want and addressing behaviors we don't want and just normal dog training.
Thank you, Patrick. And Kathy?
Okay. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Navy. I'm the old lady, I guess, of the group. I served in the first Persian Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm. I've been training dogs since about mid-1990s. I competed in a sports called Schutzen with Rottweilers. And then I got involved in the German Shepherd Resource and Rescue Center. And that's where I got my service dog. He came as a rescue out of an abused environment.
Okay, great. Thank you again, both of you, for joining us. And thanks for sharing a little bit about your background. Now, it has been, as things go on with the PTS Dog page, and we're growing, we're seeing a lot of new faces, new people messaging. And one of the trends that I have picked up on as we're just watching people posting and talking about their service dogs and things is what I would consider unrealistic expectations. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about it and to kind of explain the situation. There are three ways to train a service dog. The first way is to find an organization that trains a dog, and then they pair you up with a quote-unquote fully trained service dog.
And most of these organizations require about 2 or 3 weeks of time with the handler and the dog. However, the way that generally works is the first week is just spent with each veteran who's being paired with a dog, but not a specific one yet, meeting a dog, spending time with that dog. And if they hit it off, then they'll pair that pair. If they don't, they move the veteran to the next dog. And so they kind of cycle through and try to choose a dog. Then they have a week or possibly 2 weeks of classes in how to handle their dog. That's one way. Third-party training is what I call it. The second way is the one that I recommend the most highly, which is cooperative training, which is where you own the dog. You're responsible for the dog 24/7, but you go to classes with a trainer and learn to train your dog. The reason I recommend that most highly is because not everybody knows how to train a dog. And that's where the trainer comes in, and you go to your classes, and the trainer teaches you what to do, and you go home and you practice. And through that process, you develop a bond with your dog. And that bond is, in my estimation, the absolute essential foundation of all PTSD service dog work or any mental health service dog work. The third way is, of course, to train yourself. And again, not everybody understands how to train a dog. You run into roadblocks. You can't see the forest because you're too close to the trees sometimes. But it is effective. And I can tell you that most of the owner trainers that I know who are legitimate dog handlers go out of their way to make sure that their dog is trained above and beyond any of the requirements that organizations might place on behavior and things with the dog. But again, that foundational piece is there, the bond that you create with your dog. So I wanted to do this show, and I wanted to talk with a couple of people who are training, who train professionally, who train day in and day out, and talk about realistic expectations when it's become apparent to you that a service dog is the way to go. So, Patrick, what are your thoughts? Just you know, as I laid it out, as I'm seeing the problem, am I missing the target altogether, or is this really what I'm seeing? Is that pretty right on?
It's definitely 100% right on. I mean, so many people, like you said, they think that organization fully trained service dogs, they get the dog, they don't have to do anything. They don't realize that that training is 24/7 for the entire lifetime of the dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you stay home and you don't go anywhere with that dog ever and it just stays home, it's never going to get the experience of being out in stores and stuff. So any of the behaviors of high distraction environments are going to go downhill. I mean, the dog will remember some stuff, mm-hmm. but it's not going to retain everything and keep its training up to standard. I mean, that's like anything you want to do in life. If you want to be good at it and stay good at it, you have to constantly practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kathy, your thoughts?
Absolutely agree 100%. And you've got to challenge the dog and the owners, but the bond is key. If you're not bonded with your dog, it's not going to pick up in the subtle differences in your breathing, in your behavior, in your anxiety. And that's where the task training is going to kick in. But you want them to pick up on any signals you're given at the beginning, so you actually become healthier the longer you have your service dog.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a good point. The longer you have your service dog and you work together and function as a team, the healthier you as a person become, because your dog, building on the bond that you have created, alerts you when your state of mind is becoming unsettled. I often talk about getting spun up or spinning up, you know, and it's really hard to describe if you don't have PTSD what it's like. You know, you just, something keys you and you start going into that fight or flight response mode, rage response, panic attack. It exhibits itself in many different ways that the medical community has determined is atypical. rage response, fear response, panic response. Some people dissociate and lose track of where they even are. Flashbacks can occur and things like that. Well, that's how do you know when that's happening? Because you can't see inside somebody's head. The dogs pick up on several different factors. Your blood, heart rate is a good key factor. They can actually hear it. Most of the time, your dog can hear your heart rate if you're close. They can smell changes in adrenaline in your blood. When adrenaline dumps into your system, the dog can pick up on that adrenaline dump. Changes in cortisol levels, changes in dopamine levels. Dogs have incredibly sensitive smell organs in their noses, far superior to humans, and they can tell those changes. And that's where we get the tasks trained to teach the dog to do things like distract us from whatever it is that's getting us spun up, is because the dog will pick up on that change, look at us, you know, respond in some natural way, and we take that natural alert and we shape it into something we want the dog to do. What can you guys tell me a little about that process of that, of shaping that natural, that alert and into a task worthy response?
Dino, for me, has actually picked up on me going into the fight or flight or the rage even before I realize that I'm starting to. And that's because, you know, him and I have been together 3.5 years now. But he picks up on those changes even before I feel it myself. So I can actually institute some of the coping mechanisms which keep me going from a high, high level every time. Mm-hmm. Each time it does happen, I'm not getting higher. I'm getting lower. So my peak is actually dropping. Mm-hmm. So my PTSD is becoming, for lack of a better word, more manageable because of my dog. And it takes me less time to recover from an attack.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. Patrick?
Yeah, for Twix, he knows when I'm getting stressed out, and he'll come over and he'll nudge me with his head. Now, I haven't actually trained him for alerts. He doesn't alert to me. He responds to panic attacks and things like that when they happen. Now, there are some times that he knows my stress is getting higher and he'll come over and he'll nudge me and everything, but that is not something that I count as a trained task because he's doing that on his own. I have not shaped that into anything.
Okay.
And I think that's also where a lot of people get confused. They think their dog has to alert. It has to alert. If it doesn't alert, it's not a tat. It's not going to be excellent. They forget that your dog can respond to things. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing that Twix does, is he is more a response than an alert.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. There are different ways that people work with their dogs. And I guess a big takeaway, if anything, that the people should get from this show is, look, you've got to train your dog to do what works for you. Not what somebody tells you works, but what you have found works. For me, I learned early on to trust Skeeter when he's telling me, hey, you're not responding appropriately to this. You know, you're stressing out and you don't need to. And so he would alert when I started keying up or spinning up. And I taught him instead, because he'd come over and he'd nudge me. Well, I understood he was naturally responding to something going on in me, and I'd stop everything. I would literally stop in the middle of a conversation and do a little self-assessment and go, what's going on here? Why am I getting pissed off? And once I realized that's what he was keying on, then I would reward him for coming to alert me. And then I taught him to sit on my foot. So now when it comes to something that where I'm in a situation where I'm starting to spin up, first thing Skeeter does is come over and sit on my foot. That's his level one alert. Hey, you're getting spun up and you need to not do it. And one of the things I discovered, excuse me, really early, is when a 100-pound dog sits on your foot, there is one thing and one thing only you do naturally. It's a natural response of the human being. When a 100-pound dog sits on your foot, what happens? Your hand drops immediately onto the dog's head and you start petting the dog. And that has been proven scientifically, that has been empirically proven to release endorphins, lower cortisol levels, and calm you. They've actually figured that out medically with wires in people's heads or something. I don't know how they did it, but they figured out that that calms you. So with PTSD, and that's one of the things that I hope people will learn to understand with PTSD, if you don't have PTSD, when something's stressing you out and starting to piss you off and you're starting to get upset, a typical response, not a PTSD response, but a typical response is to say, I need to take a break. I need to walk away. I need to cool down. I need to think about this. But PTSD takes that filter that's in your head already away, and you go from I'm okay to I'm being attacked, fight or flight response immediately. There is no filter in between. So the dog that alerts is trained to alert, that you use that and shape it into a task to let you know, hey, something's going on that doesn't need to, ends up working, functioning as that filter where your brain has a short circuit now because of PTSD. And like Kathy said, as time goes on, as you work together as a team, as you build on that bond, you're better able to manage your responses and stop or slow down and quicker to be able to recover because you've learned new mechanisms to cope when your dog alerts you and says, something's going on in your head. You need to stop and take a minute. And that's, it's a really hard thing to, it's a hard thing to train because you have to really look inside yourself to figure out what's going on and why. And that's what I've termed, and I term it in the book, the process of training your service dog. And I think the next most important thing that we're going to talk about, the bond is number one, absolutely the bond between your dog. However you trained your dog, if you were, whether you train your dog to be responsive or if you train your dog to be proactive, if you don't have that bond, you're training the dog to do neat tricks. But I guess one of the things that I've found is that when I'm in the state of mind where he needs to respond, I'm not in the state of mind to tell him, hey, come over here and respond. You know what I'm saying? When you're in exactly. when you're in full fight or flight, you can't say, oh my God, I'm in full fight or flight. Skeeter, come help me. You know, Dino, come help me.
Yeah. One thing, my relationship with my dog and his training is constantly evolving because him alerting me is helping me recover faster, but then there's different things going on. So it's a constant process. I mean, it's not like you just get a dog and he alerts or he reacts and that's your relationship with your dog for the life of the dog. It's constantly evolving because in that you're changing, your dog's changing, you're aging, your dog's aging. Mm-hmm. So that's where the bond helps because you know when it's just a normal change and right. when it's a PTSD reaction.
Right, right. And that's something, I mean, I've had Skeeter for 8.5 years now. I've had him since birth, and that's not normal. That's rare. But it's very rare. I knew when my wife at the time put him in my hand, and he literally fit in the palm of my hand, that this was my dog. That's not normal. And I don't, I can't tell you why that serendipitously worked out. And I've got this amazing battle buddy. I can't tell you what magical formula. There is no magical formula. It just so happened that's how it worked for me and Skeeter. But over that period of time, almost 7 years of public access now with him, over that period of time, his needs have changed and my needs have changed. And although he still performs the trained responses, he doesn't do it as often anymore because we've gotten into this swing, this rhythm, if you will, where he knows that this situation is going to stress me. And he tells me by, honestly, it's almost always really the biggest problems, the biggest PTSD problems I have now is public access. And it's always, you know, something like in the grocery store or going into a restaurant when somebody's being confrontational, he starts pushing against me, starts trying to move me away from that. So there are times literally when I'm grocery shopping and I need to go down aisle three, but there's 13 people in aisle three. He'll just sit down and balk and say, nope, we're not going in aisle three. And it's not because he doesn't like aisle three. It's because he knows if I'm in that crowd surrounded, I'm going to ramp up. So we go to the next aisle, get what I need from there, and we come back to aisle three when there's less people. And I've learned over a long period of time, it took me as long as it took him. It actually probably took me longer. I'm on the dumb end of the leash. I've learned to trust him when he says, no, we're not going down that aisle right now. We can come back to it. For lack of a better way, he doesn't literally say that. But if he balks at going down an aisle, I listen. Because I've learned if I don't listen, sure enough, something in that aisle gets me going. Every time. Every time I ignore my dog and do it my way, I'm wrong. And there's no better way to explain it. There's no, some things you can't train. Some things are built based solely on the bond and his knowledge of him and my knowledge of him. And that's hard. That's a hard concept. And it's really hard for, say, Patrick, for you to take a dog that's going to go to a client and train that dog to do that for that client without that client there.
Yeah, absolutely. If I don't know how the client moves and some of their reactions to things, how can I teach the dog to respond to those? I mean, that was probably the hardest thing I had to do with Twix was teach him to respond to panic attacks for me, because I mean, he would naturally tell me when, like, hey, you're getting stressed, but actually what he does. So I had to actually take a step back, which I mean, like I said, this was extremely difficult. It took a long time. Was I had to realize when I was starting to have an anxiety attack, and I had to pay attention to what I was doing physically.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I realized, oh, okay, if I'm like getting really depressed and my hands go over my face, like a lot of people do, you know, they put their head in their hands. I'm like, okay, that is something that I physically do. So now I can use that action outside of a panic attack to role play one and get him to respond to that. So what I do is put my hands over my face. And whenever I did that, I trained him to come over, and it hurt sometimes because he headbutted me. But I mean, he's got a big head, but he pushes his face in between my hands and either starts licking my face or nudging my face to get my hands away from it. So that breaks me out of whatever I'm doing to, oh my God, there's a 70-pound brick wall smashing into my face right now. I kind of need to pay attention to this instead.
Distraction or redirection. There was a group called the Psychiatric Service Dog. Oh, I can't remember their full name. They're defunct now, but they made a very inclusive list of tasks that psychiatric service dogs perform. And distraction or redirection was one of them. And that's exactly what you just described is, okay, so here I am, I'm panicking or I'm depressed. I put my face in my hands, put my head in my hands. And at that point, the dog comes in and says, no, pay attention to me, not to whatever it is that's getting you down, and redirects your behavior. And again, it's so nebulous because everybody responds differently. And that's something I don't know how to describe it except to say, look, what freaks me out and sets me off and sends me into orbit isn't what bothers you. And it's not what bothers Kathy. We all have different things that, you know, one of the weirdest things, but not weird considering the circumstances that I experienced that caused PTSD, the burning of garbage, of plastic garbage, puts me into immediate flashbacks and fight or flight response immediately. If I smell burning garbage, I'm gone.
Yeah, right back to those burn pits.
Yeah. And that's, it wasn't burn pits for me. But that's, you know, that sets me off. That doesn't necessarily bother anybody else. You know, Kathy was also in the Navy. Kathy, I sincerely doubt you ever experienced a burn pit, did you?
I did not. And, you know, my PTSD comes from being a victim of MST. So, you know, my triggers are being in close quarters, people coming into my personal space, someone coming up behind me, especially a big man.
Yeah.
So,
completely different things that set us off. So how can you just blanket train, you know, well, this dog does these seven tasks and they'll help you?
Well, I think something that you said is key, JJ, and it's big for what a service dog does, and it's redirection. Because the human mind cannot think two thoughts at once. So even if it's a physical redirection or a mental redirection, like Skeeter not letting you go down aisle three, Dino, when I'm standing in a line facing behind me and, you know, starts leaning on me when a big guy's coming up behind me, or, you know, Twix coming up to Patrick when he puts his face in his hands. It's all comes back to redirection. Because PTSD locks you into this cycle of trauma in your head where you can't think of anything else. And your dog breaks that cycle and redirects your thoughts.
Exactly. Absolutely. That is absolutely true. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at timelines. We're going to talk about what kind of time does it take to train a service dog? You're listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DVRadio.net. I do want to let you know that I'm not the only host of the only show on DV Radio. We have kinds of shows on DV Radio. One that I like to listen to occasionally when I'm bored and need some noise in the workshop is the Up in Arms podcast, which airs on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. And that's on DVRadio.net, WDVR. We will be right back.
DV Radio.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
Radio. Are you looking for veteran resources and peer support? Objective Zero has an app for that. Download the Objective Zero app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Access wellness resources like yoga and a free year subscription to Headspace, the world's most popular meditation app. Check out veterans resources and access our nationwide network of peer support. Speak to fellow women veterans or someone in your field and branch of service. You get to choose who you want to chat with. Learn more at www.objectivezero.org. That's www.objectivezero.org.
We're back on the air.
DV Radio. And welcome back to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. With me again are Patrick and Kathy. Both are members of the PTS Dog Facebook page moderator squad. And they are both dog trainers who have been doing this for a few years and have some great knowledge about service dogs. They are both disabled veterans, both handle PTSD service dogs, have trained their PTSD service dogs, and assist other people with training their dogs. And like I mentioned before the break, I want to talk about timeline. Everybody has this rosy image, and we've already touched on, you know, this pre-trained dog concept doesn't really work very well for PTSD. And I'm not saying it doesn't work, and there are people who it does work for. It absolutely does work for some people. But if you're really if your goal is really to find out what's going on in your head and start learning how to get past it, how to grow through it, how to use that to progress and to heal, it's a timely process. It takes a lot of time and it's very involved and it requires a lot of very deep self awareness. And that's the hard part. So I want to talk a little bit about timelines. Like I said, I've had Skeeter since birth and, I see so many people, oh, I got my 14-week-old puppy and he's already alerting to this and to that. And I just smack my forehead. It's facepalm time, you know? No, your puppy's just being a puppy. And so let's talk a little bit about maturity in the dog through different age levels and where you really want to start. And understanding every dog is an individual and some are faster than others in picking things up and learning. But what's a realistic timeline if you're starting with an 8-week-old puppy? Hopefully you're not starting one with one younger. What's a realistic timeline to build that puppy into the potential service dog?
I'll jump in here real quick, Patrick. For me, and this is both in regular pet training and in service dog training, or in dog sport training. When you get a puppy at 8 weeks old, it's going to drive you nuts for a couple months. It's teething. It's not housebroken. The first 6 months just cover the basic obedience, the sit, the down, the stay, you know, the come, the real simple, very basic obedience. That time is in building your bond with your dog. Mm-hmm. I didn't get Dino till he was 3 years old. I didn't start training him until 6 months into my relationship with him because I had to build the bond. So it was like getting a puppy. It was just a smarter puppy.
A little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, Kathy's spot on. I mean, you have an 8-week-old puppy right now. The biggest thing you want to do is get that basic stuff down. Mm-hmm. Work on getting it housebroken, the sit, the stay, having it around you. Basically, it's going to drive you insane. It's what puppies do. It's the same thing as a child. Children drive you crazy too. I didn't get Twix till he was just shy of 11 months old. And I didn't consider him out of an in training vest. So I didn't consider him a fully trained, not fully trained, but because fully trained is throughout the entire life of the dog. Mm-hmm. But I didn't consider him a service dog and not a service dog in training until about a year and a half, 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's just because at his age, he had some bad habits that he had been allowed to develop and to have. So yes. I needed to address those first before a lot of forward progression could take place. The great thing about getting a younger dog, especially an 8-week-old puppy, is it hasn't developed those bad habits yet.
Right.
So you are shaping it from the beginning and going on. Will some stuff show up? Yes, but it's not going to have enough time to set in and become a developed habit.
Right. So you're there to redirect that behavior immediately.
Exactly. Exactly. You can handle it right when it shows up. Mm-hmm. And deal with it then rather than months going on of it just getting worse and worse and worse. That's why, I mean, my next dog is most likely going to be a puppy from most likely a breeder.
Yeah. Now,
absolutely.
Let me state very clearly, I don't think any of us are against rescuing dogs. I'm certainly support rescue. If you choose to rescue a dog that's older and train it, by all means do. However, you need to understand when you get a rescue dog, you don't necessarily know what that dog's history is. You don't know what it's been through, what its experiences are, if it's been abused or not, or to what extent it's been abused. And you don't know, for lack of a better way to put it, you don't know what that dog's triggers are that are going to trigger those bad behaviors not, you know, those behaviors that did not get trained out previously. So if you choose to rescue, you're looking at a difficult road. You're looking at a difficult road no matter how you train your dog. But if you choose to use a rescue, please understand there's probably a lot of things you have to overcome in that dog. And if you don't have the experience to do it, find a trainer to help you, please.
Absolutely. And even as a trainer, JJ, and having a rescue, mm-hmm. I've been able to modify so many of Dino's behaviors, but there's one. And if it's somebody walking right towards him and they spread their arms wide open, like 90% of people do with dogs, oh, mm-hmm. puppy, mm-hmm. he will show teeth. Mm-hmm. When I first got him, he would lunge, he would growl. Now he just shows teeth. You know, and so he's modified that behavior, but I have not been able to eliminate that because he's rescue. I love him. He's my world. I am heavily involved with the German Shepherd rescue. But rescue dogs come with baggage. And, you know, when you get the owner surrender, they're not going to tell you if they beat the dog. Dino was beaten for 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to get the true story. You're going to get the owner stories. You're going to get the rescue stories, and the truth lies somewhere in between.
Yeah. I'll tell a story. When I bred Alaskan Malamutes, we got a sire in who was essentially a rescue. And here's what happened: is the father, single dad with three teenage boys, and they're bugging him. They want a dog. They want a dog. They want a dog. So he bought them an Alaskan Malamute, and he was very excellent breeding stock. I mean, outstanding dog. And gave it to him and said, here's your dog, train him. And didn't teach him anything, didn't show him anything. And so it got to the point where the man, as far as we can figure out because of the way the dog behaved, I was out doing some repairs on one of the dog pens. And so I'm a large man carrying a 2x4. And this dog went berserk. And putting two and two together from the way the dog behaved to exactly that one stimulus, this guy would take a 2x4 and beat the dog with it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and this dog, I got to tell you, like I said, he was great breeding stock, but boy, was he a rough dog. He was rough. He hated Skeeter. He tried to kill Skeeter a couple of times. So I had to be very careful keeping Skeeter away from this particular male. Because this dog just hated him, and there was no fixing that. That dog was so reactive, so aggressive, and it was because of the way he was treated. And it was just criminal to take such a beautiful animal. But, you know, like I said, when you rescue, you really don't know what's in the background. You don't know what's there before you came into the dog's life. So please be careful. Likewise, if you buy a puppy, even at 8 weeks, you are starting with almost a blank slate, almost. Okay. But that puppy has still had 8 weeks or 10 or 12, however long it's with its mother, with its pack, with its siblings. It still has some behaviors that it picks up in that little pack environment. And
you also have to deal with genetics too. If you're getting a drivey dog.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a dog with a high prey drive, high food drive, high ball drive.
Yeah.
You know, the great assist with training, but you also have to be aware of having a service dog that has prey drive.
Oh, yeah. I have a service dog that has an extremely high prey drive. I have to be on top of that at all times. Perfect example, my Walmart. There's a wild cat that lives underneath the big... you know where they park all the shopping carts? A cat lives there. I know the cat lives there. We've seen the cat multiple times. I know if Skeeter sees the cat, Skeeter goes, snack time. So I know I have to, one, be ready for him to try and get a snack, and two, be ready to redirect him, refocus him, get his attention back 100% on me. And we have a routine we do, and get him back into the mindset of, oh, we're working. We don't chase cats right now. Translate, you know, at home when he's free to go potty and do what he, you know, be a dog. If he wants to try to catch a squirrel, I absolutely let him. I let him be a dog. And he loves chasing squirrels. He's even caught one once that blew my mind. I won't tell you how gross it was watching him eat it, because I wasn't, there was no getting it away from him. But man, let me tell you, that was nasty. And I, of course, dewormed him the next day. You know, I mean, you know, I went through all the careful, you know, it's not a matter of endangering him. He's a Malamute. Malamutes hunt. They're, you know, part of their breeding was to help hunt. And so you have to understand that prey drive, and you have to understand what to do when that kicks in. Ball chasing a ball. I learned this lesson. It was so weird. Military experience is great. I got to meet and talk to the military working dog handlers when I was stationed at Naval Air Station Whidbey Island. And they had the number one dog for the entire Pacific Theater. It was a Belgian Malinois. And this dog would turn himself inside out for 30 seconds to a minute and a half with his tennis ball. That's all that dog wanted, was to play with his ball. And he would do anything to get a chance to play with his ball. You got to figure out when you're training what drives your dog. What's the reward? What's the big bingo bonus that says you did good? Here's your reward. You know, with Skeeter, food. Food's a big reward for Skeeter. It's not necessarily what works for other dogs. And again,
on the subject, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, on the subject of breeding, I think we should touch on, and I think Patrick will back me up on this, get the breed that's right for your lifestyle.
Yes.
If you're a stay-at-home person, if you don't, you know, get out there and exercise, don't get a Malinois.
Yeah. Doesn't matter how beautiful the dog is, if you can't fulfill the dog's needs, the dog's not going to be able to fulfill your needs, because it's going to be going nuts. Because it's stimulation.
Research your breeds.
Mm-hmm. Don't say, well, I've always thought these dogs were beautiful, so I want to get one.
Ugh.
Look at your needs, not the breeds.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's like the people seeing the videos of the Malinois climbing up the ladders and going across ropes and stuff. And they think, oh, that's awesome. I want a dog that can do that. It's like, okay, while some of the learning capability and the drive is going to be genetics, that's a lot of teaching. And I guarantee the person who taught that has done nothing every single day but teach that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Breeds that have those capabilities also have the drive to do those kinds of things. And that drive, look, if you want to, and I'm not saying don't go get a Belgian Malinois. I'm saying be ready for a Belgian Malinois if that's what you're going to get. Because you've got to be able to work with that dog and fulfill its needs the same way that dog's going to end up working for you and fulfilling your needs.
Exactly. Get a dog that matches your lifestyle. And I'm not talking about, you know, a dog that's going to go to the store with you, because any dog can do that. But for instance, if you're a runner, you know, get a dog that's more active, like a Dutch Shepherd, like a Malinois.
Yeah.
You know, get a dog that enjoys running. If you have mobility issues, get a tall or stronger dog.
Yep.
You know, it's like you said, breed or need before breed.
Absolutely.
Get the breed that's going to work for your disabilities.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I know when I started training Skeeter, I know that an Alaskan Malamute was the absolute ideal dog for me, because at that point in time in my life with PTSD, I needed a dog that was as stubborn and pigheaded as I was. Because he had to stand up to me at my very worst. I'm not that way anymore. Conversely, I needed a dog that was big enough to help me, because one of my service-connected injuries is breaking my back. And so I do need mobility assistance, and an Alaskan Malamute does have the strength and the size to be able to perform those kinds of tasks. Well, as the PTSD needs have gotten lower, they're still there. It hasn't gone away. I'm not healed by any means. But I've learned to deal with it better. I've learned the strategies using my service dog to be able to avoid the flashbacks and the rage fits. And, you know, that doesn't happen very much anymore. It still happens, and it comes out of the blue with no warning, just like it did before, just not as frequently, because I've got new coping strategies using my dog. But physically, you know, back injuries like mine don't get better. And so even as the PTSD has been reducing, the need for physical assistance has increased. His successor, because I can never replace him, But the dog that will take over eventually when it's time is probably going to be more of a Meloser breed, like a Mastiff. Bigger and heavier set and more capable of moderate mobility assistance and less stubborn and pig-headed and grouchy and a pain in my butt like Skeeter the Malamute. We argue like an old married couple sometimes. You know, but I needed that. At the time I needed a dog that was going to look me in the face and go, "You're an idiot, stop it." And he does. And I don't need that as much anymore. I still need it. It still happens occasionally, but it's at a much more manageable level. And that's, you know, that's really the goal. Honestly, you know what the ultimate goal of having a PTSD service dog is? Not to need a PTSD service dog.
Exactly. Ultimately,
you want to get to the point where you can do it on your own. You can do it yourself because you do understand what's going on in your head and you understand how to deal with it. Some people never get there, but as long as you're striving, as you're growing, as you're trying to move forward, that's what you need to be. That's growth. That's progress. That's what General Mattis referred to as post-traumatic growth. And you can build that with the assistance of a service dog. Now, during go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, sometimes I still need Dino to leave the house, but then I can leave him in the car while I run into the store real quick.
Yeah.
Where 3 years ago, every trip, he had to be right there with me. Mm-hmm. Now it's, okay, you know, I'm running into, you know, the grocery store for milk.
Yeah.
I leave Dino in the car. The car's running. I know all the rules about leaving dogs in cars. The car's running. The air conditioning's on. And I can run in and I can get the milk and I can come back. And I get in the car and I'm like, phew. And he's, you know, climbing over the passenger seat, licking my face like, good job, mama.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, your PTS dog, too, is your biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Could I touch on just two things that popped into my head?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, the one is about the shelter. I know we already passed that subject, and the other one is about the eating a squirrel. So the shelter, there are some absolutely fantastic shelters out there. So I'm not talking about those individual shelters. A lot of shelters have like a little placard on the front of the dog's, the dog area that says, it'll say like, single family home, no small children, no cats, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to interpret those. So no cats probably means the dog has an extremely strong prey drive for small animals.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No children probably means that the dog is human aggressive in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Something like that. So you have to be careful and know how to interpret those signs as well.
Yes.
Onto the eating an animal. There are a lot of, like, I've gotten the question a couple times of somebody freaking out. They're like, my service dog in training just ate a rabbit. Does that mean he's done? Does that mean he's aggressive now and totally done? It's like, no, you're fine. It happens. Don't worry about it. It's just because your dog eats a little creature doesn't mean that everything is flushed down the drain.
No, not at all.
It doesn't mean that. At all. Well, there's the old wives' tale of once the dog kills something, then it's blooded and good it's very depressing. You can't do anything.
The bloodless theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's complete bullshit.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's just something your dog did because your dog is a predator. It's what it is.
It's a, yeah.
Don't worry.
It's a dog, not a robot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Don't worry about it. Maybe keep a little better eye on your dog next time so it doesn't happen again if it grossed you out and stuff like that. I understand that. But it's nothing that's going to set you back a little bit. Don't worry about it.
No, just understand it. Understand it for what it is and redirect it if it's something you need to not happen. You know, look, and Skeeter knows. If Skeeter's on the leash, he ignores squirrels. Squirrels don't exist when he's on the leash. When he's off the leash, game on, you know. You can train.
Once again, know when you breed.
Yep.
I'm sorry?
It's once again, know when you breed.
Absolutely. Understand what your dog's drives are. And if you don't understand what a dog's drives are, find people who do and ask them. I don't know anybody who won't tell you all about their dog.
Well, Well, in research breed, before I got involved in Schutzen, I spent 3 years researching Rottweilers to make sure that it was the right dog for me to compete in that dog sport.
Yeah, yeah. And that's...
One thing I did want to jump in on, JJ, too, that Patrick had pointed out, and it stuck with me, and he just reminded me, is even having a PTS service dog, you got to give your time dog to be a dog.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Dino knows when that harness is on him, and I choose to use a harness that's not mandated. Mm-hmm. When that harness is on him, it's absolutely working time. 100% me and him are connected.
Yeah.
You know, when he's out in the yard, go to town, have fun. Here's the jolly ball, be you. But he also is always keeping an eye on me and checking in with me. Even when he's running around, he'll turn around and look back at me.
Yeah. And that's something that I think any psychological service dog, any dog that's trained to respond to psychological symptomology, one thing that people need to understand is you can't turn PTSD off. There's no off switch unless you're unconscious, which, which is going to lead to the next thing we're going to talk about and wrap the show up with. So the dog, if the dog has the bond and everything is based on that bond, the dog really doesn't have any time off. However, when you're doing good and you're not in a place where you might get triggered, for lack of a better term, I hate that word. The dog should, because of your bond, know that it can relax, and you can use activities that the dog loves. Skeeter loves hiking, loves going out in the woods. And, depending on where I am, although I'm fairly rural, there's still houses all around. So I can't just let him loose and go tromping through the woods with him and just let him run, because he'll end up in somebody's backyard. And, you know what? Here in North Carolina, Malamutes are rare. And I could just hear, oh my goodness, look at the wolf. Click, click, boom. You know, I just know it would happen, because people don't understand he's not a wolf. He's a Malamute. He looks like a wolf if you're not familiar with the breeds, you know. So I have to be very careful. But if we're out in like a national forest, I take the leash off. He never gets beyond eyesight ever. And, you know, he runs, and he just is a dog, and he has a great time chasing squirrels, digging up after rabbits, doing whatever, you know. I have to be careful here in the South because there are snakes, which I didn't really have to worry about up in the Pacific Northwest. But, you know, I learned to trust my dog, and I've learned to know that he's always within calling distance. And if I call him, he'll come back. If I start the truck, he'll come back so fast that it'd be like he was never gone, you know, you can't turn PTSD off. And if your dog is, you know, working off the bond, the dog's always going to be aware, but the dog's also going to understand when it can relax. I mean, Skeeter's stretched out on the couch right now snoring because I'm not in a place where I'm going to have any kinds of problems. But if I do start having a problem, he'll be right here with his face in my lap going, what's going on? You know, headbutting me, bumping me with his nose, you know. And it's not, and you know, people, look, we hear all these kinds of things, complaints, you know, some PETA guy came up and said I was a slave driver and my dog never got to relax and stuff. Look, that is not the reality. You build a partnership and a teamwork with your service dog. And that dog, the dog wants a purpose. And once you've trained that dog what its purpose is, when it gets to fulfill its purpose, that's satisfying for the animal, you know, and it's satisfying for you, because really, especially with PTSD, when the dog knows, oh, you're calming down, I don't have to alert you anymore, I did my job, you know. And that every time Skeeter alerts to me and I pay attention and I stop and I refocus and I'm focused on him, and then I'm like, oh, good job, buddy. And I'm starting to reward him, and that tail starts wagging. And he says, yeah, I did a good job. I did a good job, you know. That you can
go eat a squirrel.
yeah, let's go eat a squirrel. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's the teamwork is there. You got to build that teamwork. During a break, you guys were discussing something, and of course I'm drawing a blank on it.
Personal development and kind of personal growth along the way.
Yeah.
And different treatment options on which one's better and stuff like that.
There we go. There we go. Yeah. And the sentence when I got back in the door, because I had to, take dogs out to potty. When I got back in the door, one or the other of you said, and I think it was you, Kathy, service dog is not always the right choice.
That was Patrick. He actually started that conversation.
Okay. So let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, you have to be in the right mindset. So if you have extreme anger and aggression issues, which is not uncommon with PTSD, I had it every now and then, depending on situations, it can definitely start to build back up. But I'm in more control of it now because of the personal development and stuff that I've done and having Twix with me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have those anger issues and you're easily set off, your dog, when it's trained to come over and interrupt stuff, your dog's job is to be annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it is, to be persistent and get your mind off of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, if you don't realize that, you're going to get mad at the dog.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. And the dog's going to be like, okay, I'm trying to help you and you're being a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me not want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So you do have to realize some stuff. And the other thing that we were talking about was, for some people, a service dog is not the best treatment option. I mean, we get questions all the time. And we see it all the time of, hey, I have PTSD. I want a service dog. Hey, I want a service dog. Hey, I think I need a service dog. It's like, listen, you need a lot of time, effort, dedication. You need the money that you need to spend for vaccinations, food, care, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to just live with a dog, much less have a service dog.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't do all that stuff, maybe it's not right for you at this point in time. And Kathy was saying, I mean, I'll let her take it away in a second, but sometimes medication and therapy are going to be better for you at this stage than a service dog could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be at a certain point in your healing for a service dog to come in. If you're like Patrick said, if you're in the middle of that rage, and a dog is going to come bother you, you know, you don't want to turn around and kick the dog, you know? I mean, nobody wants to hurt an animal. So if you're still at that point where you can't manage your rage in a physical sense well enough that you wouldn't hurt the dog, then it's not time for a dog. Learn some coping mechanisms. I mean, I went through, 3 years of therapy and learning a medication recipe that worked for me. And then Dino came in and took over the rest. The medications are gone for me at this point. Do I still see a therapist? Yeah. I mean, Dino's my best therapist, but he doesn't talk back. He doesn't give me insight in the sense of that a trained professional does. It's not a service dog isn't a fix all.
No.
You'll have to work with your entire medical team to find a process that works for you.
That's exactly right. That's, and you know, I wrote about this in the book. I write about this on the page. Skeeter was the last resort. I was heavily medicated. I was zombified. I was on the zombie cocktail, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I was taking over 30 pills a day and, you know, it was a perfectly reasonable endeavor to just lie in the bed and stare at the ceiling all day.
Yeah.
Got to take my pills. Ate, laid in the bed, got up to eat, take my pills again, and then, you know, eventually fade off. And that was a day, and that was fine. That's not living. That's just pacification, which a lot of times it seems like is the goal of the VA. But you have to get to a point where you say, enough is enough. I need to get out of this. This isn't living. And then you've got to start seeking out what works. And, you know, I personally, I don't think a service dog should be the last resort, but for me, it was my last resort. And that's where I started to find healing.
Find a medical team that works for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If your care isn't working, I got so lucky at my VA. I have a phenomenal primary care physician. I have a phenomenal therapist. My primary care, I got right off the bat. She specializes in women's health. Mm-hmm. My therapist took me 4 tries because with me, I'm a logical thinker. You know, I've got to know the science behind everything. So I had to get somebody that went through my brain to get to my emotions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just find the person that works for you. If you're not comfortable, move on.
Yep.
Because you're not going to do anything but get angrier.
Yeah. And you absolutely, VA patients, you absolutely have the right to request another doctor.
Absolutely.
You do. And you might have to fight. You might have to argue about it, but be patient. Take a step back. Don't get mad. Just explain, look, this isn't working. I need to try another therapist. We're just not connecting and I'm not comfortable. It's okay to use those terms. It's okay to look, you're in control of your health, not the VA. It's not like when you were in active duty and what the doctor said was an order. It's not that way anymore. The VA tends to treat us like it is. But guess what? The contract is over. It's you're not under orders anymore when the doc says you need to do this and this and this. That doesn't mean don't listen to your doctor. That means if you're not gelling with your doctor, if you're not getting what you need, ask for another doctor. You have that right. It might take a little while because we know how the system is and how clunky it is, but don't relinquish control of your health to the VA. You're in control. It's your health, not theirs. They're not interested in your health. They're interested in getting you in and out. You have to be interested and involved in your health.
And don't give up. If you hit a point in your healing where something is just overwhelming, JJ, the page is a perfect place to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put together a great team of moderators. We're available 24/7.
We try to be. We try to be. Sometimes some of us sleep.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick and Kathy, I'm very grateful that you joined me. I think we've had a very productive discussion today on the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. If you like the content you're hearing here on DV Radio, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter of DV Radio. You can go to dvradio.net and click on the, let me see where the Patreon button is at. I think it's right on the home screen. And you can support DV Radio. I'm not sure where it is. You can also check out the DV Radio page on Facebook and find the Patreon link there. This is by veterans for veterans. And it's all free. We don't make any money doing these shows. And it does cost us server space, licensing and things like that to do this. So your support would be greatly appreciated. Check out, of course, the PTS Dog page on Facebook. I've also got a PTS Dog page begun on vets.com. And don't forget that you can pick up your copy of PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and the Service Dog at booklocker.com, barnesandnoble.com, and amazon.com. If you choose to purchase a copy of the book from Amazon, please consider using smile.amazon.com. and choosing the DV Farm as your charity. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, this is PTS Dog signing out right here on DV Radio, WDVR.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
DV Radio.